Radio's own show, Behind the Mic. Radio, with a switch of a dial, radio brings you tragedy, comedy, entertainment, information, education, a whole world at your command. But there are stories behind radio, stories behind your favorite program and favorite personalities and radio people you never hear of. Stories as amusing, dramatic, and as interesting as any make-believe stories you hear on the air. And that's what we give you, the human interest, the glamour, the tragedy, the comedy, and information that are behind the mic. Now, presenting a man whose name has been a symbol of the best in radio since the beginning of broadcasting, Graham McNamee.
Thank you, Gilbert Martin, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience. This afternoon, Behind the Mic devotes its entire program to the pioneers of radio entertainment. During this program, you will hear such old friends as one of radio's first pianists, Winifred T. Barr, violinist Godfrey Ludlow, Joe White, the Silver Mask tenor, my old radio twin, Phillips Carlin, Milton Cross, and WJZ's first announcer, Tommy Collins. I'm going to first call upon two of the real pioneer announcers in radio, Milton J. Cross, who was the second announcer at WJZ, and Phillips Carlin, now manager of NBC's Red Network. Phil and I were together as twin announcers in the early days at WEEF, when Jay-Z was under different ownership and our station's rival, before the National Broadcasting Company was formed. We continued as announcers until Phil decided to branch out into an executive position. Here they are, Milton Cross and Phillips Carlin. Don't get scared now, fellas. I asked both you birds up here for a regular gab fest about those early days in radio. Those were the days, weren't they?
Yes, Graham, they certainly were. Do you remember the face?
I certainly do, Phil. You haven't heard this one, have you, Milt?
No more than 50 or 60 times. Yeah.
Jealousy, Graham. Remember, he was on Jay-Z.
Well, you people were commercially minded. You on WEAF sold time for commercial programs.
You people on WJZ would have, too, if you could have found somebody to buy it.
We were in business simply for the sake of art.
You're not kidding either, Mouse.
Graham, how about telling the fish story?
Well, we people at WEAF used to get all sorts of presents. Mm-hmm.
Confidentially, not as big as the ones we got on JZ.
Ignore him, Graham. Go ahead.
Well, it was the middle of the summer, and one afternoon, somebody sent me a large fish. We didn't know what to do with it, so we put it on the ice, with which we used to cool the little control booth, which was hotter than any hinges I ever heard of. And this was before the days of air conditioning. We forgot all about it. We left the fish there overnight. When we came in the next morning, it was obvious that the ice had melted sometime very early during the evening. And the fish and the intense heat, ho-ho!
You know, I never knew that a fish or a studio could smell so high.
Those were the days, Phil. You fellows remember our radio shows used to go on and off the air right on the dot?
Yes, on the dot of 3 minutes before the program was supposed to end or 4 minutes afterwards.
Yeah.
After all, there weren't any commercials in the early 1920s.
On WJZ.
Remember, boys, we're all part of the same company.
The executive speaks.
I'll never forget those standby orchestras. If a program ended a few minutes ahead of time, there'd always be a string trio or a pianist to fill in the time.
Yes, that was when a big station only had a couple of studios and not very big ones at that.
And remember how a dramatic program would be rudely interrupted near the finish by the musicians of the next program walking into the studio and calmly setting up their chairs, dropping bass fiddles and so forth while everybody went... Oh, those were the days.
Things were a lot more informal then than they are today.
Informal? I remember one time when WJZ was at the Aeolian Hall. I was doing the stock market report. There I was at my desk. Adams Express, 94. Ahumada Lead, 12 and an eighth. Ajax Rubber, 13 and a quarter. I beg your pardon, ladies and gentlemen. Stand by for just a moment, please.
What happened, Milt?
Nothing. Some fire engines were going by the studio at the moment, and I wanted to see where the fire was. So I went to the studio window, watched the fire engines for a few moments, and then I stepped back to the microphone and resumed the stock market report. Ladies and gentlemen, to resume the stock market report, Allied chemical and dye, 92.5. Allied chemical and dye preferred, 119.25. Anaconda copper, 93.
Those were the days.
Here is a little spot devoted to the radio listener of the early and middle 20s. So let's hark back to a typical scene in New York City in which John Smith is listening to Bill Brown's new Feda Nutridyne, the latest model, with a gorgeous Magnavox horn-type speaker. Bill's wife is also present.
Will you leave that radio alone? I was just starting to enjoy that music.
But I'm trying to get Davenport, Iowa.
You get it yet, Bill?
I think I had it last night.
I get KDKA Pittsburgh once in a while on my radio.
That's nothing. I got chilly last night listening to my radio.
You don't say. You really got chilly?
Yeah. I opened the window too wide.
Hey, say, Mary, do you hear what Bill said? He got chilly on the radio last night. He opened the window too wide.
What's that got to do with chilly on the radio? As far as I know, he never got further than WIP Philadelphia.
Wait, I think I got it now. Do you hear that?
Well, how about turning on the happiness voice?
Quiet, quiet.
Oh, I want to hear the happiness voice, and I'm now.
Listen.
Oh, it sounds like traffic to me.
Yeah, now, on my feet,
wait a second, I've got something.
Well, how about the happiness voice?
As I was saying, on my feet, I... Listen, somebody is speaking it. Yeah, it's Chinese. Hot dog, I think you're right.
Hey, come here, Mary. Listen to this. I got China.
Oh, I don't hear.
My God. China. Get that on your feet, Eichmann. Gee, can you imagine?
This is Lee Wong broadcasting from Lung Fang Chinese Restaurant in New York City.
I want to hear the happiness, boys.
Ladies and gentlemen, we introduce another radio pioneer who was Station WJZ's first announcer and who helped in the actual construction of WJZ's first studio, Tommy Cowan. Where are you, Tommy? Hi, Tom.
Very fine, Graham, and you?
Tom, how did WJZ start?
WJZ, Graham, was originally part of the Westinghouse Electric and Manufacturing Company of Newark, New Jersey. It was built for experimental purposes. Nobody knew whether the radio was going to last or whether it was just a passing fancy.
Well, do they know now?
No, not definitely. That was in 1921.
At that time, I had a very responsible position in the factory, and I was also in charge of dramatics for the Employees Association. Naturally, through this contact, I was selected to take charge of the radio station.
Well, I suppose WJZ's first studio was a bit less palatial than the studios are today.
A little less, but far more interesting. For our first studio, we curtained off half of a recreation room in the Westinghouse building at Orange and Plain Street in Newark, New Jersey. I got some ideas for soundproofing the studio from the Edison Laboratories at West Orange. For instance, we hung heavy monk's cloth around the studios to deaden the echoes.
Well, that's an idea that's still used today in most studios. What was the first broadcast of an event from WJZ, Tom?
The first game of the World Series, October 5th, 1921.
Mm-hmm. Well, WJZ was the first station in the New York metropolitan area, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, Graham. And incidentally, we used to sign ourselves on the air with these words. Very naive when you imagine it now. This is the telephone broadcasting station of the Westinghouse Electric and Manufacturing Company located at Newark, New Jersey. Please stand by to tune. We repeated this three times.
But WJZ was a rapidly growing station, wasn't it, Tom?
Yes, it was, Graham. It had to be. It wasn't long before we took over all of the recreational facilities in the plant because room was scarce, and we renovated a few of the offices and made them into additional studios for practice.
Well, how long did WJZ stay in Newark?
Well, until May 15th, 1923. Then we moved to Aeolian Hall in New York City when WJZ was taken over by the RCA, a couple of years before the formation of the National Broadcasting Company.
Tommy, I have one last question. What was the first broadcast over WJZ? Not the first regularly scheduled broadcast, but the first real entertainment.
You mean our first use of studios with artists? Well,
yeah.
The first song was Slumber On, My Little Gypsy Sweetheart, from Victor Herbert's Fortune Teller, with the Shannon Four, now famous on radio as the Revelers.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Tommy Cowan. Thank you so much for coming up. So long, Tom. Ladies and gentlemen, we present the sound effects of yesterday compared with those of today. We will first show you how a sound effect was made in the early 20s, and then how that same effect is achieved today. And remember, in those days, there was no sound effects department. Sound effects were made by the actors and musicians on the show. First, the simple effect of closing a door. Yesterday, it was made like this. They raised the lid of a grand piano and slammed it down with a bang. Hear it? But later on, some genius discovered that the sound of a door's closing could best be made by a closing a door. So today, in order to make this effect, we simply close a specially constructed door within a frame, like this. Sounds exactly like a door closing, doesn't it? It was. Yesterday, the sound of cannon fire was made by striking a kettle drum and hitting the low notes on the piano, like this. Today, it is made by playing a recording of cannon fire on a turntable. Yesterday, the sound of walking upstairs was made by rapping on the top of the piano, like this. Today, the same effect is made by the sound man actually walking up a specially constructed flight of stairs, next to which a microphone is placed to catch the sound, like this. Very good. Yesterday in radio, a moving automobile sounded like this. But today, by using a recording of a moving automobile, it sounded thusly. In the early days, the sound of a zooming airplane, of a moving locomotive, of a wind blowing, and of a forest fire were made like this.
Look at that airplane zoom.
My, isn't that train moving fast?
Isn't this a terrible wind?
Good heavens, a forest fire. It's coming this way.
There just wasn't any way to make these and the myriad sound effects that today we take for granted. But all honor to those actors and directors whose fertile minds contrived those early sound effects before the networks ransacked the lunatic asylums and raked up the ingeniously screwy personnel that makes up today's sound effects department. Letters from listeners. Here are some typical letters sent by listeners to radio editors in the early days of radio. These letters will be answered by one of the pioneer radio editors who is now radio editor of the New York Times, but who in 1924 held a similar position on the Pittsburgh Post. Tom Kennedy. Tom, come in. Remember, these letters were written in 1924. A listener wrote, "I'm thinking of buying a radio. Which do you think would be better, a crystal set or one of those newfangled sets with tubes?"
If I were you, I would not buy a crystal set. I will go out on a limb and say I wouldn't be surprised if time came when crystal sets will be completely outmoded.
Tom, another letter said, "I was listening to my radio last night when suddenly the station went off the air. Can you tell me why it did that?"
Yes, Graham. There was an SOS at that time, and since radio stations broadcast on channel bands very close to that which the ships use, whenever there is an SOS, all stations are ordered off the air, so that messages to and from the ship in distress will not be interrupted.
Another listener asks, "I understand some stations are using commercial advertising. Do you think this is ethical?"
You must remember that the radio stations have no revenue. And small though the amount of money they make from advertising may be, the additional revenue enables them to conduct further experiments for the benefit of radio. However, you might be interested to know that in a recent magazine article, the Secretary of Commerce stated that direct advertising on radio will never pay.
A lady says this, "I bought one of these new type radio sets, and I hooked it up, as you advised, and left it on my table all afternoon, and it didn't play. What shall I do?"
Madam, turn on the set.
Well, thank you, Tom Kennedy. Thank you very much for that latest information on radio. And now we pause a few moments in our program of pioneers to pay tribute to some of the pioneers in the world of radio entertainment who are no longer with us. To Madam Schumann Hank, Billy Jones and Ernie Hare, Roxy, Joseph Pasternak, Countess Olga Albani, to Will Rogers, Russ Colombo, Robert Strauss, John B. Daniel, Helen King, the M of Clara Lou and M, Gerald Stopp, Colonel Charles T. Davis, to Tim Frawley, the original old ranger, and to all the others of that grand crew who helped entertain us in those days of early radio. We also think it fitting to add to the list of those whose passing we regret the names of Donna Damorell, who was the Marge of Merton Marge, Hal Kemp, and Joe Penner, great artists all and beloved by the radio audience. No broadcast about radio's early days could be complete without presenting a condensed version of a day's program of a radio station in the middle 20s. And announcing the program, man who was one of radio's favorite announcers, my old sidekick and radio twin, Phillips Carlin. The incidents used in this condensation are all true and prove anything could and did happen in those days.
Good evening. And now we will hear our studio hostess and staff pianist, Winifred T. Barr, play the Chant de Voyageur of Paderewski. Thank you, Winifred. Winifred T. Barr will now play...
Miss Barr, what?
Oh, Miss Barr has been called away to her duties as studio hostess. She'll be back as soon as she finishes answering the telephone. In the meantime, I will read The Shooting of Dan McGrew by Robert W. Service. A bunch of the boys were whooping it up in the Malamute Saloon. The kid that handles the music box was hitting a jagtime tune. The back of the bar in a solo game sat Dangerous Dan McGrew, and watching his luck was his light o' love, the lady that's known as Lou. When out of the night, which was 50 below, and into the din and glare, there stumbled a man fresh from the creeks, dog dirty and loaded for bear. He looked like a man with a foot in the grave, and, Miss Barr has returned to the studio, and she will now play the A-flat waltz of Chopin. Welcome the silvery notes of radio's most popular singer, the Silver Mass Tenor. He will sing for us, Passing By.
There is a lady sweet and kind, was never face that pleased my mind. I did but see her pass by, and yet I love her till I die, and yet I love her till I die.
Is she here yet?
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we were supposed to hear the voice of the well-known singer, Miss Carol Latrobe. But unfortunately, due to the fact that it's raining, Miss Latrobe has not appeared at the studio. And so we bring you Miss Winifred T. Barr at the piano playing Romance of Rubinstein.
Romance
I'm happy to say that Miss Carol Latrobe has appeared at last.
Where do I stand?
Here, in front of the microphone.
This thing?
Yes, that's the microphone.
For her first selection, Miss Latrobe will sing Elegy of Massenet, accompanied by Miss Winifred T. Barr. Miss Latrobe.
The rest of my music. I'm sorry, audience, but I've forgotten my music.
And Phil. Phil, after tearing his hair out by handfuls, that's probably why he hasn't got so much left now, drew a deep breath and continued with the day's work.
Our program will be carried on by Miss Winifred T. Barr, who will play Paderewski's Minuet in G. And now, we hear from the kiddies' favorite, Milton Cross, in his regularly scheduled bedtime stories.
Good evening, children. When last we left Francis Frog, he was sitting on a lily pad in the big pool at the bottom of the garden. He was saying to himself, "My, I feel so lazy today," which isn't a good way for a little frog like Francis or any little child to feel. "Oh, hum," yawned Francis. "I wonder where Woof Woof, the little dog, is hiding." So he hopped off the lily pad and into the great, big, beautiful pool.
Thank you, Milton Cross. The kiddies will await your return tomorrow night at the usual time. And now, who do I see approaching the microphone but that splendid violinist, Godfrey Ludlow? Mr. Ludlow will play Bach's Air on the G string.
Thank you.
Thank you, Godfrey Ludlow. And now, Dr. Phineas T. Swan, the eminent botanist, will talk on plant life in the Andes.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. In discussing plant life in the Andes, we must first understand that...
Thank you, Dr. Bott. That was a most informative discussion. And now we present the well-known concert singer, Miss Sonia Newman, in her first appearance on the radio. Miss Newman, what will you sing first?
My old Kentucky home.
Miss Newman will be accompanied by Miss Winifred T. Barr.
Oh, the sun shines bright in the old Kentucky home. 'Tis summer, the dark hills are gay. The corn tops ripe and the meadows are in bloom.
Make music all the day. Our young folks roll on the little cabin floor, all merry, all happy and bright. By and by, hard times comes on us.
Wow. Our soprano fell apart and quit singing through nervousness. But our good old reliable warhorse pianist, Winifred T. Barr, took up the song and sang it through to the finish. Yes, and that was the way it was. Winnie was sure in there pitching in those days. And ladies and gentlemen, the incidents portrayed in this condensed version, as we said before, actually occurred in the early days of radio. And I'm just the little guy that can prove it. Very often things were very much worse. Thank you, Phil Collin, Winifred T. Barr, Joe White, the Silver Mass tenor, Milton Cross, and Godfrey Ludlow, who later won fame playing his violin on the Donna Mazo program. Thank you all for helping take us back to the good old days. Oh, and now, ladies and gentlemen, I see that our program has run just a bit short. So, Phillips Carlin will repeat The Shooting of Dan McGrew with piano background by Winifred T. Barr.
A little hearts and flowers there, Winnie. A bunch of the boys were whooping it up in the Malamute Saloon. The kid that handles the music box was hitting a jagtime tune. Back of the bar at a solo game sat Dangerous Dan McGrew. And watching his luck was his light of love, the lady that's known as Lou. When out of the night to 50 below...
You will hear another old favorite, Whispering Jack Smith. Remember? You'll hear how NBC grooms its child actors, its future stars, and more of the glamour, the tragedy, and the comedy that are found behind the mic. In addition to those who appeared on this program, we sincerely thank the following for their valuable information about the early days of radio which made this program possible. Catherine Seymour, Helen Guy, Henry Fisk Carlton, and Harold McGee. This is Graham McNamee speaking. Good afternoon, all.
Behind the Mic is written by Mort Lewis. Original music composed and conducted by Ernie Watson. This is the National Broadcasting Company.